Well, hello, hello, and welcome back to the Ethos of Aid podcast. My name is Kimber, and I'm your host. In this episode, I share with you an experience from North Sudan that shines a light on the impact of living incongruently and the power of a moment to realign, to transform. If you're enjoying what you're listening to, please let me know, either at kimbervredenburg.com or on the Ethos of Aid Facebook page, or at Kimber Vredenburg on Instagram. Let's get started. As I described in episode 4, discovering I had beliefs and values, and that aligning my actions to those was a powerful experience. Over and above informing my practice with vulnerable people, it provided me with a framework with which to live my life, to measure my success, to explain some of the feelings I had. Typically, they arose when I was not acting in accordance with what I claimed to believe and value. And as soon as that awareness arose, I could lean into it, look at the beliefs, course correct, feel better. It's simple as a framework, but not easy. As you've heard me say, changing behavior requires exploration to become aware. That requires willingness to look into those parts of ourselves that perhaps aren't in congruence and choose something different. That can be especially difficult when the social norms in one's environment emphasize keeping things as they are, or don't allow for critical reflection. Or as you've heard me say, if an individual living within a collectively organized society holds differing beliefs, or perhaps working for an organization that holds different beliefs. This is the core of my work, creating space for people to look inside themselves, feel into what they want, see what's blocking them from achieving it, both in terms of their own beliefs and values and behaviors and those imposed by the cultural context in which they reside. Creating space for the kind of dialogue that allows for different thinking, perhaps more options, and supporting people to do that work and create the lives they want, be the best versions of themselves that they can be. We can function well enough without examining our beliefs, unaware of what it's costing us, but the evidence of those costs are everywhere. Think of just about any social problem in your context, and you can likely trace it back to some form of discord between how an individual or group is living and how they really want to be. And people who are of service to others, such as the local practitioners I've been describing and talking to throughout this podcast, serving their own vulnerable populations, such incongruence has an even greater cost. It not only leads to the fragmentation you heard me describe in the Rwandese staff in episode 5, but sometimes resentment, apathy, depression, and it impacts the very programs they're implementing, the people they're trying to serve. In my experience, knowing oneself allows one to be known. It fosters vulnerability, which in my experience forges connection. And connection fosters further connection, something in my experience every human being wants and needs. That's what this narrative is all about. North Sudan and South Sudan are fascinating cultural contexts. They are now two separate countries, though they were once one, at least geographically. And as a result, they were the largest country on the African continent, narrowly beating out the Democratic Republic of Congo for the title. The North of Sudan is mostly arid desert, and the south is tropical, with 93 different tribal groups mixed after decades of civil conflict. It can be difficult to trace lineage, but in terms of identity, there is ideologically a clear delineation between north and south, and the religious beliefs divide almost as cleanly, with the north being primarily made up of a Muslim population and the south primarily Christians. Although the conflict between North and South has ceased many times, and the South has formally seceded from the North, there are many conflicts that continue internally, exacerbated by both internal and external influences, and hundreds of thousands of people have been displaced over the years. If you recall, I said, probably a couple of times, one cannot separate oneself from context and the impact of whatever we call history typically carries right on into the present day in terms of beliefs, values, social norms, and behavior. I was hired to work for an international NGO in a local residential center for children under the age of 4 years old. It was in the capital of Khartoum. These children had been abandoned due to being born out of wedlock. In this context, the religious and social norms were clear. These children simply did not have the same rights to live as other children did, as their parents had committed the ultimate sin in their creation. They came to us hours old, days old, weeks old, years old, having been found in gutters, dumpsters, and streets. And I'll admit that with each new babe's arrival, as a new mother myself, I couldn't help but feel for the mother out there somewhere who'd had to make the ultimate sacrifice to leave their newborn in order to save themselves from punishment for their very existence. We had 400 nannies at the center for round-the-clock care of these children, and such was the societal stigma on them that most of the nannies' families did not know where they worked. As for their own motivations to do so, they told me they were primarily economic, and in this case, they shared that their reward would be in the afterlife for having taken care of these children. I was managing the psychology program, staffed with Sudanese psychologists, half of whom were from the north, and so Muslim, and half from the south, so Christian. One of the challenges facing the center was its imminent closure. There simply wasn't funding to continue, and there was nowhere else for these children to go. The only other residential center for children well above the age of four was too bleak to even be considered a next step, and it was difficult to find foster families and adoptive families for these children, given the societal norms around their status. Adding to this, by virtue of the center being in North Sudan, the government decreed them to be Muslim children and as such unable to be adopted by Christian families. These were just some of the complexities around the lives of these children, and I accepted that I would never fully comprehend it all, so I set about doing what I could with the team that I was leading, knowing they would be there long after I had left. They were very skilled staff. Their clinical knowledge was good, their relationships with the children were excellent, and even the lone male psychologist, who was made fun of at every turn by the nannies for, in parentheses, playing with children, a job not considered suitable for a man, he too was exceptional in his assessments and his relationships and work with the children. He taught me many things. And when I gave him positive feedback for his work, he always passed the credit on to Allah, teaching me that in this northern context, it is impossible to separate the self from his spiritual and religious being. They were one and the same. It was valuable learning I carry with me to this day. I noted that the staff worked well enough on the surface of things, but as discretion was valued in this context, it took a bit of time for me to feel the underlying tensions. Little occurrences suggested there was a lot not being said. Adding to this, The government periodically went in and bulldozed the temporary housing that most of the southern staff were living in, a clear message that they were unwanted in the north, and naturally, our southern staff carried the trauma of those times and the underlying message into the center with them, despite their best efforts to leave it outside the door. Change was inevitable, is inevitable. It was happening all around us. The situation in Darfur was worsening, and though it was far away, it added to tension in the capital. The program was closing. What would happen to the children? The children also sensed something was awry, and their behaviors reflected this. They were as unsettled as the staff were. Sharper words were heard here and there, despite the strongest commitment to polite interaction that I had ever witnessed. It was time. I felt that the thing I could give was to strengthen this team by creating a space to explore all that was going on underneath the surface of things. We spent 2 days at the office exploring the themes of change, identity, teamwork, through games and activities. This team had been working together a long time, and there was much enjoyment and shared learning in the room. For the last session of day one, I introduced activities to draw out beliefs about the children with the aim of exploring under the surface and creating new ideas for finding prospective foster families and adoptive families for the children in our care. The staff shared these beliefs openly, revealing some of the deep cracks in the perceptions they held both about children and each other. This, of course, was also my underlying aim. I knew we were wading into potentially choppy waters, and I also knew it was there we needed to go if I was to be of any service to them. We had created a set of norms for this 2-day workshop at the beginning, and I now reminded them of the rules they'd agreed to, helped create, to make this space safe. My reminder, as it turned out, was a gateway for an oncoming flood. With the beliefs on the table and discussion opening, one formidable and vocal woman from the southern staff stood up to her full height, directed her gaze towards our lone male northern staff member, and began her booming diatribe with, "You people," followed by a litany of assumed beliefs and judgments that came pouring forth in a long-held wrath that ended in a challenge to him about how can you do this work when you people believe such things? Consider these children to be evil and without the same rights to live. It hung in the air a while. I'm not sure I kept the wince I felt internally from showing on my face, because while her delivery lacked ownership and tact, it did also slice right through layers of formalities and niceties and moved us straight into the core of the issue. I held the space, asked for silence, and for the recipient to share what he might like to say in response. Very quietly, as he was known in all ways, he looked up and into her angry eyes with clear respect and love in his own. He asked her to consider the space between what the tenets of his religion advocated, in this case, the specific care of children, such as those in the center, and the application and misapplication of those tenets in the creation of societal rules and norms by certain members of society. He delineated between the intent of the teachings of his religion, the spiritual guidance they offered, and the man-made cultural norms that had been devised from them, not unlike in her own religion. He also asked her to consider the common beliefs they held, that she had witnessed in his daily practice with the children. It was the only time I ever heard him point to himself yet still that self was an extension of his spiritual and religious beliefs. The rest of the staff were silent as they listened and watched the exchange, and it was the end of the day, and I made a strategic choice. Rather than try to tie a bow around the place we had reached, I decided to leave us all feeling mildly uncomfortable. Change occurs when we're safe enough to be uncomfortable, and I knew that if we tried to clean up the proverbial mess, we would only sweep underground again the very wound that had been exposed, and it needed light, air, further exploration, and cleaning out. I also know that a lot can happen with a little bit of time and space for reflection. I slept poorly, I'll admit. In this work, I am guided by intuition, held by my skills and experience, and I follow people's lead, knowing that risks of a certain nature will always be involved in any kind of personal growth. That said, mentally I tossed as I made notes and preparations for the following day's exploration, but I needn't have bothered. One of the greatest aspects of being a facilitator of collective learning like this is allowing things to take shape as they need to be, without need to control, and by the people who need to shape them. Before we'd even fully arrived in the room the following day, the woman who had thrown the gauntlet stood up once again and addressed both our male staff member and the rest of the room. She said, "I want to begin with an apology. I am sorry for my confrontational manner yesterday. I am an emotional person, sometimes judgmental, and impacted by many years of injustice. Sometimes this combination does not bring out the best in me. But you are right. I have seen you and your work, and it is not right to generalize. There are many similarities between us. Now that you have helped me see this, I have more questions." I was so proud of her in that moment. I was honored to witness her growth as she allowed herself to be vulnerable, took responsibility for herself, and reached out for forgiveness, connection, and to be taught what she did not know. He responded in kind. He too had thought much of what she'd said the previous day, reflecting on his beliefs, how they fit with his practice, with the children, and within a cultural context with such strict rules. He asked for dialogue with the whole group, to which the group readily agreed. They had heaved a sigh of collective relief when the tension of the previous day was replaced by humility, and they had thoughts of their own to share. The dialogue that day was some of the best I've ever had the honor of facilitating. And again, while I won't paint the outcome as having resolved every issue they had with one another, they all took steps towards one another that day, unpacking personal experience, traumas, dreams held and lost, beliefs, values, and the shared constraints of social norms upon their lives, as well as the shared hopes for the children and the opportunities they could collectively create for them. It remains one of my best and favorite pieces of work, and I believe reveals the power of creating space yet again where long-held unspoken beliefs can have some light and air. And while that will invariably foster tension, even moments of conflict, it's a necessary clearing that in many contexts, families, and individuals leads to catharsis, growth, and change. I am honored to do this work, I'm only ever a guide, meeting individuals where they are throughout the world and helping them to be their best selves, their most honest, conscious selves, so that they may live in alignment, in congruence with their beliefs and values, and as such, live the fullest expressions of themselves. Towards that end, I've made a decision to open up my practice and work with a wider audience. I now have a mindset coaching business, delivering a unique program that weaves together the thinking required to reach our goals with the feelings and actions that fuel the process. As I've discussed here, we peel back the layers of beliefs, see what serves us, what needs letting go, so anyone, anywhere in the world can create the life they really want and deserve within their cultural context. As such, I'll be taking a break from this podcast. 3 weeks, I believe. And it's likely that Ethos of Aid will evolve within that time. So stay tuned for an announcement of its return, an announcement of my return. I thank you so much for listening this far. I delight at seeing the statistics, the analytics of people listening and where you're listening from in the world. It's an honor and a real pleasure to share these narratives of the heroes of humanitarian aid work in the field and the resonance their experiences have with people across the globe. Well, that's a wrap for now. You've heard narratives from Malawi, Ethiopia, Ghana, Rwanda, Sierra Leone, Pakistan, and now North Sudan and South Sudan. There are so many more narratives from each of these places lodged deeply in my heart, and I do look forward to sharing them with you in future. For now, I hope you'll reflect on them, on what you've heard, perhaps what you've learned, allow questions to form in your own heart, and reach out and let me know if that happens, either at kimbervredenburg.com or at kimbervredenburg on Instagram or on the Ethos of Aid Facebook page. Bye for now.